Hi, I'm Mel Pickup, Chief Executive of Bradford Teaching Hospitals, and welcome to this month's episode of our podcast series, where I'm sitting down with colleagues and partners from across the Trust and the wider community to find out more about them and their contributions to the health and well-being of people here in Bradford. Today, we are talking about our partnership with the Nipple Innovation Project, which provides breast cancer patients with realistic 3D nipple tattoos following surgery. I'm joined by founder and chief executive officer of the project, Lucy Thompson, and by Kathy Tate, an associate specialist in breast surgery and our multidisciplinary team leader for breast cancer here in Bradford. Welcome both. Let's start with trying to understand a little bit more about where this service sits in our hospital services and our offerings for the people of Bradford. So, Kathy, can you explain why some breast cancer patients lose their nipples as part of their treatment? Is it always necessary, or does it only occur in specific circumstances?
Yeah, so the latter. When I started working in breast surgery 20 or so years ago, it was really standard practice to remove everybody's nipples if they had mastectomy and reconstruction. And that's not always the case now. So I suppose we think about factors about the patient and then factors about the disease. Some of our patients who have mastectomies are having them as preventative mastectomies. So they might be gene carriers, for example. So they're having mastectomies to reduce their risk of getting a breast cancer. Some patients need to have mastectomies because they've got cancer and we can't save their breast. And some patients might just need their nipple area excising as part of cancer treatment. So keep some of their breast tissue, but still lose the nipple. So it's thinking about, I suppose, cancer safety or oncological safety, we would talk about, and how close a cancer might be to the nipple. If you're doing a preventative mastectomy, then we know that it's oncologically safe to keep nipples, but sometimes maybe patient factors might make you take a nipple away. So sometimes patient choice. Sometimes if you've got somebody who's got a very big breast and a nipple that's a long way away from what their breast reconstruction is going to look like, you might take the nipple off just because you think you might not be able to keep it alive, or if you can keep it alive, it might be in the wrong position. So different things to think about from patients and from a disease point of view.
And Kathy, in your experience, what sort of an impact does the absence of a nipple have on patients' recovery, both physically and emotionally?
I think everybody is different. Some people, it just doesn't bother them at all and they don't want to have a nipple reconstruction. But some people, it can have a really significant psychological impact. And I think for some people, they kind of don't look at their breast, even a reconstructed breast, as a breast until that point where it gets the nipple on. It looks like a mound. They focus on little bits that maybe aren't quite right. And we know that then sometimes we can reconstruct a nipple or get Lucy to help us tattooing. And that draws their eye away from worrying about minor differences, because overall then it looks much more like a breast.
So how common is it now for patients to opt for nipple reconstruction or tattooing versus how we may have carried out procedures in the past and may not have been able to offer that?
Yeah, I think it is a personal choice, and certainly not everybody wants to have a nipple reconstruction or a tattoo. It's probably about 50-50. There are some patients in the past where we've thought rebuilding a nipple in theatre might not be possible. They might have had radiotherapy, they might be smokers, they might have very thin skin. And I suppose previously we'd have said to them, actually, we don't think we should be doing a nipple reconstruction here for worry about complications. So when we've embraced tattooing with Lucy, there is another option there that doesn't necessarily involve a surgical procedure, still with very good results.
Yeah. And what are the limitations of the nipple tattoos that, before we met Lucy, we were able to provide as an NHS organisation? Because I think we're going to talk about how we came across Lucy and how that relationship has formed, but you weren't always with us, you weren't always working with us, and prior to that, the offer that we were able to give was not as good as the work that Lucy now does, is it?
Yeah, I think that's true, isn't it? How we reconstructed the nipples previously, just the tattooing service, if we think about that, there were some limitations of the kit that we get. We can't use permanent inks. We didn't have a really amazing range of colours. So we could do some shading, we could do some colour that roughly matched. We're not professional tattoo artists. So I don't think they looked... Well, I know they didn't look anything like Lucy's tattoos looked. I think they looked okay. But then the inks would fade. So every year or 2 years, people would have to come back to have them topped up. So there was that side of it. And then we had staff inside of it. And again, when I first started work, we used to tattoo nipples in theatre. But that seemed like a waste of theatre time because theatre time is precious. So we would do it in outpatients. Then we trained up some nurses to do it and then they retired. And then we trained some more staff to do it and then they left. So then it all stopped for COVID. And at the end of COVID, we had ancient kit, no staff, no service. And so for 4 years, we had no nipple tattoo service at all. So that was an enormous limitation in that it just didn't exist. We had to restart it somehow, and then we could go back to the drawing board and think, actually, how do we really want to do this?
So, Lucy, the drawbacks of this being a podcast and not a telecast is people cannot see what I can see, which is you are clearly a big fan of tattoos, and you've got some fantastic images that I can see on your, because you're wearing a T-shirt, which is a fabulous T-shirt, by the way, and has got some fantastic imagery that is most fitting. And when you see the video that goes alongside this and maybe some photographs, listeners will be able to see what I'm talking about. You can check out our vlogs and find out. How did it all start for you?
So for me, it's quite an interesting story, I think. I started my career as a tattoo artist 12 years ago now. And very early on in my career, I was really fascinated with the healing transformational power of scar cover-ups. So if someone had had a scar from maybe surgery or maybe self-harm or something, and they'd move forward past the trauma, they'd just choose to cover it up with like beautiful artwork, and it was a really beautiful thing to be a part of, to see someone feeling so empowered. And I was asked one day out of the blue to do a nipple tattoo for someone, and I was never heard of one before. The lady had explained to me she'd had one done in a hospital and it had faded away, and she just felt that she didn't want to keep going through that process. Yeah. So at the time, I'd known that my own auntie had actually had mastectomy surgery. So I kind of brought the subject up with her, and she was really dismissive, which I was confused about. And she said she'd had a tattoo, but she didn't want to talk about it. But I also didn't understand that. So I kind of pushed it a little bit. Maybe I shouldn't have done, but I was like, please explain it to me. And she just explained that she'd had a really, really negative experience. It was quite painful for her. And then she said it faded away, and she said, that was 10 years ago, Lucy, and I haven't looked at my breast since. And it's just given me goosebumps again. You know, I just thought my own auntie she felt some sort of shame about this. You know, she said, I just don't want to cause a fuss. I don't want to go back. But you shouldn't feel that way. You know, it just didn't feel right. And so I started doing some research, and I found that the semi-permanent options were the standard that was offered, well, worldwide, to be honest, not just in the whole of the United Kingdom, but everywhere. And as a tattoo artist that does permanent body art, I just couldn't comprehend why a nipple tattoo would be semi-permanent. It's, to me, and in my experience, we're replacing a body part. It's not like a lip tattoo or eyeliner that's done for cosmetic reasons. So the technique for cosmetic tattoos is usually for like facial makeup adornments. So if people say they don't want to apply makeup every day on their lips or their eyes or eyebrows, they can choose to get a tattoo that's implanted with not as deep. It's millimeters difference, but the machines and the equipment used are designed to softly implant the pigment into the skin so it fades away. So they can change it as fashions change, which obviously they do often. So, and with tattooing, obviously we create permanent body art. So the machines are equipped to tattoo areas all over the body. Our skin is different all over the body as opposed to just tattooing the face. So that's a little bit of a brief explanation to...
This is a 3D image that you are creating on a permanent basis, isn't it?
Yeah.
So were you good at art at school? Was that your thing? Yeah. Can you draw in three dimensions? That's fundamentally, I guess, where it comes from.
Yeah, I've been an artist my whole life. My grandparents were artists. They sat with me and encouraged me to draw and paint. And it's a passion I've always had, and one that I'm privileged to have been able to turn into a job. So learning how to create the illusion of a 3D protrusion on a flat surface is kind of exciting. You know, it was a fun challenge when I first started to learn it. And I love that because every body and every nipple and every person is so unique, every nipple is so unique too. So it means that you still get to be creative and use your artistry to create something pretty beautiful.
And it's not something you can learn to do in Bradford, because you had to go all the way to Texas, is that right, to learn to do this?
Yeah, there was no one that I could find anywhere in England offering this. It was all semi-permanent training. It didn't make sense to me as a tattoo artist, so I found someone in Texas. And in 2017, first time I left my son with my mum, I went on my own to Texas to learn this skill. And I just never knew what was in front of me at that point. I just knew I wanted to help my auntie and do it right and safe. So
how did the person in Texas start doing this? Is this something that if you have surgery in Texas is the norm?
So it was actually, she had had a preventative mastectomy and she was a master tattoo artist. She's been tattooing for maybe nearly 30 years now. And she had actually gone and had the tattoos done in hospital by a practitioner, and they actually overworked the skin and caused further scarring. And as a tattoo artist, she could see that straight away. And obviously she was really upset by that. So she decided to turn her pain into purpose and started to educate and offer like an advanced training option for people. So I'm grateful to her for that opportunity.
So I'm always really impressed when people do TED Talks. I think they're amazing. How did you get into that? How did you get the opportunity to do that? And what did it feel like? I mean, it's a big thing actually, isn't it, in the public speaking world?
Yeah, it was, honestly, it was down to this partnership. When Kathy had first reached out and things started to get in motion, we said, can we celebrate this as a charity? This has always been our goal. Please, can we go to the press? And everyone was really supportive, and we did, and we were amazingly, we were going in the BBC News. And it was actually one of the curators of the TEDx NHS talk that saw the article just by chance. The applications had actually closed. I didn't even know it existed. And she sort of reached out and said, please, can you apply? I'd really love to have your story. So I was like, okay, yeah, scary, but what an opportunity to speak about an underrated subject. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And Kathy, as a clinical professional, that relationship now that exists, I guess it means for you that your expertise takes the recipients of your care so far, but the added bit that Lucy now gives makes the job complete, I guess. That must be very satisfying for a clinician as well as for Lucy and the patient. It's kind of a win-win all round, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, hand on heart, when we used to do our nipple tattoos and they'd come back and you used to think, I think we could probably do better than this. And, you know, Lucy's an artist. I'm not an artist. I was taught to tattoo nipples a bit by somebody who'd seen somebody else do it. And then I thought, I maybe better go on a course for this. I went to London, and in the old days when I was working here and Mr. John Olzobski was our sort of clinical director, I had to go. I remember saying, please, could you sign this off so I can go on a one-day nipple tattooing course? And I, for the podcast, the answer is not repeatable. And anybody who remembers John Olzobski will imagine what he said to me. Anyway, I did go.
Well, how long ago was that?
Oh, years ago.
Years ago.
But it was one day in London, and that was our training, you know. And Lucy, I mean, that just sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? Oh, yeah, go to London for a day and then you can do nipple tattoos. And I used to think, I don't have the eye for colour. I don't have the eye for 3D effects. What we're doing is safe and it's probably better than nothing, but there probably is something better.
Yeah, I think tattooing is an ancient craft, you know. I think there's been a lot of stigma around it over the years. I think some people think that maybe we're all still bald bikers that sit around smoking on our motorbikes or something, but it's really not. It's come a long way, and it's not something that can be learned in such a short time. It's usually an apprenticeship is sort of 2 or 3 years long. You know, there's lots of different skin types, needles, machine speeds, so many things to consider. So I think that's where the difference kind of lies with that.
Yeah, you're quite right. I mean, tattooing as an art form has had a massive resurgence, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Kathy, just coming back to the partnership, because sometimes sort of breaking down the barriers between NHS services and the funding that's aligned to NHS services and how we operate, and working with the charitable sector or the independent sector to do something unique and different is difficult. How have you overcome some of those sort of traditional blocks and barriers to make this so successful?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's been quite a frustrating process of trying to do it, and it's taken us more than a year to get this established. We were quite lucky initially because there was some innovation money that was available to us, and we could do a certain number, it was maybe 10 or so patients, that was funded by a pot of innovation money to kind of look at newer ways of working and collaborative working. So that it was fine. And then it's just been tricky trying to get a more established pathway. I think you're right, Mel, it's that sort of concept of, but Lucy doesn't work in the hospital. Lucy isn't on the finance people's register. So it's just been trying to set all that up. To me, this all made so much financial sense, because it is, again, hard to get exact costings out of what we do on the NHS, and lots of things in care are bundled together. But actually, if we did a nipple reconstruction in theatre, then an outpatient clinic to remove all the stitches, then another appointment for a tattoo, then another appointment for a tattoo, and then ad hoc, however many years they wanted that topping up, for sure that's massively more expensive than Lucy doing a tattoo. For sure it is. Once you have time in theatre, it just becomes expensive, doesn't it?
And think of all the inconvenience, the waiting, the concern of from a patient's perspective as well. So. Better all round, really.
It's better all round. So there's been lots of little bits. I think we've learnt a lesson. I think we've learnt lots of lessons. Even logistical things like trying to tell Lucy which patients need doing. How do we send that confidential information? We can't send that to Lucy. So we circumnavigated that via getting in touch with the patients to say, this is actually how our new service works. This is who we are referring you to. Assuming you still want to go ahead, please make contact with Lucy. Yeah. And then they would have that letter from us, and Lucy would know that that's a Bradford patient. So we're just pulling together a kind of operational policy, because there are a few different people who've reached out to us to say, we really like what you've done in Bradford. We would like to do that. What can you tell us about it to stop us having the same conversations and making the same mistakes as you have? Yeah. So we're just in the process of kind of pulling that together. And
I had a colleague who always used to say, you can tell the pioneers by the arrows in their fronts. And that's where you guys have been, you know, pioneering something and leading the way that others who follow will be able to have the benefit of is great. From your perspective then, Lucy, did you ever, up to that point, have any dealings, you know, maybe other than being a patient or visiting somebody with the NHS? Have you found as frustrating as Kathy's described to work with? What should we learn about that?
Can I be honest?
Of course, absolutely.
I found so much resistance over the years of doing this work. Just getting a reply from an email, or just to say, I'm not interested, anything, you know, I understand people are so busy, but I've personally connected with quite a number of private surgeons who refer the patients to me, which I'm so grateful to. Yeah. But I always found with the NHS, it was just, I think in my early days, I sent photographs, I paid for books, I did like little nipple practice skin, sent them in, and I was not hearing anything back. And it was really frustrating, because I could see what was happening, and I knew that this was a solution. And that's why I put all my energy into running a charity for 7 years voluntarily. You know, it was something that we just really believed that we had a solution to something that was going on here. And we was like, please hear us. So honestly, I'm so grateful to Kathy. She's been the driving force of this. When she emailed me and reached out, it was, I think I cried, honestly. I was like, is this happening? Is this really happening? So it's been challenging, but we're so grateful to be here. And like Kathy says, we've had more trust kind of reach out to us and express their interest in working alongside the charity, which is just so exciting, really.
Do you think that the tattoos, whether they are for nipples or scars, I guess what I'm interested in is, you will see the patient, you will tattoo them, but do you then get to see them at another point to understand just what sort of impact that's had? How do you almost close the loop from a, you know, a satisfaction point of view, your satisfaction and their satisfaction?
So the tattoos that I offer are done over two sessions.
Yeah.
Mainly because we're working with scar tissue, which can be extremely unpredictable. I like to describe it as an oil painting. We kind of create the foundations, we create the first layer, we let the skin heal, and then we come back, assess the healed results and add the finishing touches. And honestly, that second session is my absolute most favourite part, because they might turn up to the first session and feel quite intimidated or nervous because a tattoo, there's a lot of people say tattoos hurt and things, and that a lot of these people have never had a tattoo.
Yeah.
So they'll be feeling nervous and they don't know what to expect. They're also, it brings up a lot of emotions for them to be stepping back into that place where a lot of people don't look at the breast, or they don't look at themselves in the mirror. So initially you'll see shock, excitement. Some people might go quiet. But for me, my favourite part is when they return for the top-up. They're walking and they're skipping through the door. Or their partners will come with them and they're saying, "Can I hug you, please?" Honestly, it's made such a difference to them. And people have told me they've been able to get jobs because of it, or they've been able to be intimate with the partner, which they haven't done for so many years. And it is so special to be a part of. It really is.
Yeah. And do you see, you will probably follow patients up from part of the kind of cancer surveillance stuff as well. Do you get the opportunity to see that as well, Kathy?
Yeah, actually we do less and less cancer follow-up these days. Patients are discharged quite quickly, but for sure we see it. We see the ones that come back, and the patients who went with our initial innovation fund, we followed those up with questionnaires, really thinking that if we're going to do this going forwards, it's good to have some evidence. And it was just really, it looked like we could have written the answers ourselves, because they wrote things like, "This is so much better. I've been coming back for years. The other tattoo's all faded. Parking was easy." You know, all the things that are really important to people.
Yeah.
And I think really what we want to do is get our cancer patients back to normal life. We don't want them to be cancer patients. We just want some people who've had cancer. And actually, if every year they come back and they have to have their tattoo topped up, that's not great, is it?
No.
We just want them to go back into their lives, do the jobs that they were doing, and, you know, move forwards as much as is possible.
Yeah. Do you think there are blocks and barriers to making some people who may well really benefit from this not go forward with it as an option? You know, is there sort of issues around, because a lot of our work here in serving the people in Bradford is overcoming some of the inherent health inequalities, challenges, blocks and barriers that exist in them accessing services, having the confidence and the support of their families to access services. Are there more people you think that might benefit that somehow they're not coming forward for it?
Yes, 100%. I think people from certain religions where tattoos are not allowed would not consider it, but only because that I tattooed a few people from Bradford, actually, that said, because they received this letter from the hospital and it said medical tattoo, the family allowed them to get the tattoo, but otherwise they wouldn't have sought it out. So unfortunately they're living without nipples. And again, the reaction of these people when they come back, they were so grateful. They need this, they deserve this to be able to move forward. So I've definitely seen some restrictions there, but also some empowerment, you know, from enabling them to feel like they can put themselves in that situation and get this tattoo that they need to move forward.
Yeah. Kathy, how about you? Because that letter the patient gets to go to Lucy to make contact for this service, that, I guess, the point at which you would see a reluctance, a resistance, or...
Yeah, and it's possible that reluctance and slight inequality goes back even that step further to even having a reconstruction. And I think we know there is an inequality in ethnic diversity of take-up rates for breast reconstruction as well. So it may be that it's back one step further than that. Yeah, it's a shame. And I guess it's something that we look to work on in a number of different ways. Even breast screening, even that sort of health promotion and breast screening bit, we start with promotion and targeting different areas and different groups. And we have a lot of work to do with that in Bradford, don't we?
We do. And that's not just breast screening. That's screening overall. It extends to the uptake around vaccinations and immunisations and all of those preventative things or early identification of disease that would lead to better outcomes. And I think it's really important that we recognise that and for our part as a hospital do as much as we can to break down those barriers. So what's the future looking like, Lucy? What are your hopes and dreams for the future of the Nipple Innovation Project?
Well, they're kind of bold, but I mean, you've got to aim high, haven't you? So ideally, we would like to be the trusted charity offering this service through every NHS trust. I know that this works. We, as a committee, we know that this works from the people that we serve. We know that this works. So, and with the help of the team here at Bradford, with the plan that they're putting together, we're trying to build a case that shows that. That means that it's kind of... it's more person-centred, you know, it's giving people an opportunity to make a choice over the body where maybe they haven't had the opportunity to have that through cancer diagnosis, obviously. So yeah, we're looking to partner with more trusts, and also we're really keen to do some academic research on the mental health implications of tattoos when they fade away and when they don't fade away, because there's no real qualitative data on that subject. So, yeah. So that's kind of where we're moving towards.
We've touched on this a little around the uptake of screening, and we know that breast screening in the UK has been around for a long time now. To get the benefit of breast screening, you have to attend regularly.
Yeah.
And there are certain reasons why people may not do that. Can you share how often and how should people check their breasts for signs of cancer? What should they be looking for, and how often should they perform self-checks?
I think it's just worth, we use this phrase breast aware. So have a feel of your breasts and know what they feel like. And then we would always recommend having a feel once a month. If you have regular periods, do it after your period, because that's when the breasts tend to be easier to examine. We would think that you should seek advice from your GP or primary care if you had a new lump, if there was skin indentation, new rashes around the nipple or the areola. We get a lot of referrals of people with pain. Actually, it's really rare that pain is an underlying feature of breast cancer. So actually, we're more relaxed about pain, but the things that I've just mentioned, particularly lump, and then we think a bit about nipple discharges. Some nipple discharges are safe and nothing to worry about, but particularly if we see blood from nipples, then that would be a reason to seek advice from primary care. But I think the bottom line is have a feel, know what you're at. And if it seems different, and after a week or two, that difference doesn't settle down, it's worth seeking advice in primary care.
Cathy and Lucy, thank you so much for sharing your valuable insights and experiences with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure hearing about your roles and how your innovations are benefiting our breast cancer patients. If you'd like to learn more about the Nipple Innovation Project, simply visit our website, bradfordhospitals.nhs.uk, and search for Nipple Innovation Project, or visit nipcharity.org.